track 12. And now we come to our feature articles. We have two short feature articles for you today. The first tells us that Team GB's visually impaired skiers had mixed fortunes at the 2026 Winter Paralympics. But among the stories of success and injury, a new media star was born in the shape of skier Hester Poole's guide dog, Pickle. The reader of this item is Heather.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Heather with a story for you about the Winter Paralympics. With the Winter Paralympics over for another 4 years, Team GB's competitors are now back home. This year we saw 25 athletes competing for Team GB in the Milano Cortina Games in Italy. But there was also an honorary 26th member, Pickle, the guide dog, who almost overshadowed some of her human teammates with glowing media coverage of her antics. This year's team was missing some of our more established competitors due to injuries, but this provided a great chance for new up-and-coming athletes to get their first taste of the Paralympics. Out of the 25 athletes who travelled to Italy, 17 were competing in the Paralympics for the first time. Here we take a closer look at three of our visually impaired skiers. VI skier Neil Simpson, along with his sighted guide Rob Poth, found success this year with a silver medal in the Super Combined Downhill Ski Race. This makes him Team GB's most successful male Winter Paralympian, with a total of 3 medals won in Beijing and Milano Cortina. Neil also achieved 2 fourth places this year in the Downhill and Super G races, but of course these results meant he just missed out on further medals. We hope he'll have more chances in future, as 23-year-old Neil also hopes to compete in the 2030 Winter Paralympics. Sadly, this year's games came just too soon after injury for one of our other successful VI skiers, Menna Fitzpatrick. Menna was competing at her third Winter Paralympics and hoped to add to her tally of 6 medals, but unfortunately she wasn't at peak fitness after suffering both a broken leg and a ligament injury in the past 18 months. Menna hopes for better luck with her fitness for the next Paralympics, as she also hopes to compete in 2030. But where does Pickle the guide dog fit in? Pickle is the 8-year-old Black Labrador guide dog for another of Team GB's visually impaired skiers, Hester Poole. Hester is a student and a youth ambassador for the Guide Dogs charity. Born with around 5% vision, she started skiing with her family as a child. Now aged 18, this was Hester's Paralympic debut, where she competed in the slalom and giant slalom races with her sighted guide, Ali Hall. When Hester was selected for the Paralympics, it was obvious that Pickle would go along with her. Pickle had an official team photo taken, and when she arrived in Italy, she was even given her own dog-adapted Team GB jacket to wear. Pickle was always to be found waiting at the bottom of the slopes to welcome Hester back after her races, and she won a legion of fans among the international journalists covering the Games. Both Hester and Pickle thoroughly enjoyed the Paralympics. Hester missed out on medals this year, but she treated her selection as a mark of success by itself. And she told the BBC that Pickle just loves being in the mountains with her. She's always really bouncy when she sees the snow. When she comes skiing, it's nice to get to the bottom of the piste, win or lose, and have this furry ball of love waiting for me.
We follow that with a piece about historic Newton Abbott. It's taken from a leaflet in the museum, which brings a wartime secret into the light. It is read by Brian.
Bringing a wartime secret into the light. Sorry you were kept in the dark, reads the front of an unassuming stapled booklet on display at the Newton Abbott Museum. The inside of the leaflet tells the story of a local garage's incredible contribution to the war effort through the 1940s. The story is told from the point of view of the Western Garage and Engineering Works and is illustrated with several line drawings. It begins, "This is our wartime story. We tell it in all modesty, seeking no bouquets. It's just that we thought you might like to know what we did after we closed our doors to normal business in October 1942. We were very hush-hush, and even our friends, whose loyal patronage we value, had to be kept in the dark. Now it can be told. The first secret job in the early 1940s was manufacturing parts for the bomb projector. This anti-aircraft weapon put paid to the attacks of Nazi dive bombers. This was our chance to show our mettle, to play our part in hitting back at the enemy. We jumped at it. Their success in producing these parts led to more government contracts and a need for more machining equipment. Our biggest headache, they say, at this time was the acute shortage of machine tools. We scoured the district and everything usable was pressed into service. Even a veteran of the 1914-1918 war, a 6-inch centre lathe found underneath a bungalow, was recovered, set to work and was soon giving yeoman service again. But with so many men away at the war, who was to work on the garage floor? The leaflet tells us this too. Some of their pre-war staff of motor mechanics remained and were supplemented by workers from every walk, gardeners, cabinet makers, stonemasons, shopkeepers, painters, clay workers, clerks, bakers, builders. These workers, some 300 in number, quickly developed skills and technical ability that this exacting aircraft work demanded. Conscious that the lives of RAF pilots depended on them, they gave of their best with unalloyed eagerness. Nearly 50% of the workpeople were women, and the stores holding thousands of new and reconditioned parts were staffed entirely by women and girls, all of them doing man-sized jobs. This unusual crew did such a good job that their commissions grew from individual plane parts to whole Spitfire and Beaufighter planes. At their highest work speed, the garage was able to output 30 planes a month. By 1942, their workload was so great they needed to expand to a new 10,000 square foot factory, but it was immediately struck by a bomb. The good work began without delay, but enemy action threw a spanner in the works. The premises were damaged, but happily no one was hurt. The speed and determination with which the job of putting things in order was tackled can be judged by the fact that not 1 hour of production was lost. By the end of the war, Western Garage had produced an extraordinary 829 entire planes and almost 5,000 individual aircraft parts.